Everything that we find in the Bible has finally one purpose, to lead us to our heavenly destiny. Compared with the Old Testament, the New Testament is much more clear, more definite, more explicit about our eternal goal. And within the New Testament, the single most extensive revelation on heaven is found in the book of Revelation of St. John, also called the book of the Apocalypse. It is the one prophetic book of the New Testament. It foretells two things. It foretells the future of the church until the end of time, what we call earthly apocalypse. But it also foretells the future of the church from the end of time through the endless reaches of eternity. This book of Revelation, as it is called, provides ample, extensive evidence about the future of the church from the first century, the apostolic age, until the end of time. An invaluable source where Christ, who made the revelation to John, tells him what the church founded by Christ in his nascent existence, as we may call it, its experiences, its sufferings, its trials, and its not merely survival, but triumph, but still in time. If there is one thing that the book of the Apocalypse brings out, it is that the church is indeed the church militant, but has a prophetic assurance of being the church triumphant. That, however, is not our focus. Our focus here is on the revelation of the church beyond time and in eternity. Our scope in this closing meditation on heaven covers the closing book and the closing chapters of the closing book of the Bible. First, briefly to quote some classic passages from the inspired author, St. John, revealed to him by Christ. Then briefly explain the meaning of these prophetic passages about heaven. And finally, draw the most important conclusion, namely, how did this apply to our spiritual life here on earth? And before we begin reflecting on the revealed Word of God as found in the closing book of the New Testament, it is well to remind ourselves that when we address God in the Lord's Prayer, "Our Father who art in heaven," we are indeed addressing God who is in that eternal heavenly kingdom where we one day hope to come. But God is already in the heaven of our own being here on earth. Why? Because in the clearest language of the church, heaven means the experience of the possession of God. And that possession of God we already have, had received the moment we were baptized. Our focus, however, in this meditation is not on the heaven still on earth, but the heaven in eternity. First then, heaven has not merely a, but the place of happiness. In each case, I will quote from a book of the Apocalypse, identify the place, and then make some interpretation and application to our own spiritual lives. Heaven is the place of happiness. Quoting Job, I heard a great voice from the throne. Behold, the tabernacle of God with men, and he will be with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself with them shall be their God, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and death shall be no more, nor mourning, nor crying, nor sorrow shall be any more, for the former things are passed away. Unquote. John from the Apocalypse, chapter 21, verses 3 and 4. What are we being told? We're being told what a strange expression that heaven is the tabernacle of God with man. The tabernacle, as we know from the Old Testament, was the sacred repository of where some of the manna was reserved from the desert. The tabernacle, over the centuries, has come to mean the place, and the key word is place. It has a locality where God dwells, and where God dwells in such a way that he is accessible and available and beneficial to man. That, by the way, is what makes a Catholic Church Catholic: the tabernacle. Heaven is the tabernacle for which all other tabernacles on earth are a prelude and a preparation. Where God dwells, where God is beneficial, generous, available, to human beings. A tabernacle is not merely a, but the sacred place. What a mystery. God chooses that there be certain places that are sacred. Does not God dwell everywhere? Of course. However, we distinguish between sacred and profane place. Here God dwells indeed, but with divine efficacy, provided the people who worship God before the tabernacle, believe that depending on the depth of their faith, he will bless them. Heaven is the tabernacle for which all other tabernacles are a preparation. Second, heaven is the place where there will be no more sorrow, no more pain. That, by the way, is the difference between happiness on earth and happiness in heaven. Happiness on earth is, what a safe statement, imperfect. What makes the happiness on earth imperfect? Because it is necessarily, that adverb is revealed, it is necessarily combined with pain. But I repeat, and I want to emphasize, we are to be happy on earth. And the price of happiness on earth is to not merely resign oneself stoically, but to accept the pain, hear it, as the condition for joy on earth. Do you hear me? We will be only as happy on earth as we are willing and ready to suffer pain. I didn't say this 20 years ago. I do now. At heaven, won't that be great? Just sheer, dare I say, unadulterated joy. And still explaining the passage from the Apocalypse that we've read, John says, under divine inspiration, no more mourning, no more weeping, no more sorrow, because the former things, I like the tense of the verb, are passed away. If there is one thing that we better strengthen our faith in, it is that we have a future. A future in which this is our hope. We can look back at the past and say, well, those are the former things. That's what Christian hope is all about. As St. Paul in his letter to the Hebrews tells us, faith is the substance of things hoped for. When we say casually, we live by faith, we live by believing there is an eternal future for which we are now preparing, but we're not there yet. We're not in heaven yet. Second reflection. Heaven has a beatific vision. Quote John, they shall see his face, and his name shall be on their foreheads. Unquote John. This time, Apocalypse chapter 22. But same verses, 3 and 4. What do we believe? We believe that heaven is the vision of God. When we say vision, though we commonly and understandably associate that with our bodily eyes. Of course, after the last day, we'll have our bodily eyes back. Back, much improved. But the meaning of the vision of God is with the mind. Time and again, during his public ministry, Christ reprimanded, rebuked his own disciples. Are you blind too? Can you not see? Our bodily eyes. What a statement. Our bodily eyes have as their highest function to symbolize the sight with a mind of seeing God. The church over the centuries has at great length and defined one of the longest sustained definitions issued by Pope Benedict XII, called the Benedictine Constitution, is on the beatific vision, in which we're told our seeing God with our minds will be an immediate. Meaning what? All our knowledge of everything, including God, is immediate. We cannot even use an expression except say that we think of God. We think about God. Those prepositions indicate you've got to have, to say the least, you've got to have thoughts. Our vision of God will not be thoughts of God, but as far as our vocabulary will allow us to say it, we will think God. Here on earth, all the knowledge we have of God is mediate many times over. Mediate, as we've just said, we need the mediation of our thoughts. We don't know anything except by having thoughts on our mind, and that by way of those thoughts, we say we know whatever we're thinking about. The nearest approximation of that immediate seeing God in heaven and is only an approximation, is of our seeing or knowing ourselves. But even our self-knowledge is mediated knowledge. We have to think, then we go back to the preposition, about ourselves. But not in heaven. But not becoming divine. The church has coined a word. We shall become deiform. Meaning, as far as it is possible for a creature to see God, hear it, as God sees himself, to know God, as God sees himself, to understand God, as God understands himself. Without ceasing to be creatures, we will share. That's what glory means. On earth we receive grace from God. Provided we die in the grace of God, the moment we open our eyes on eternity, grace will cease and glory will begin, provided. Even if it means, some delay before we reach the beatific vision. This vision of God, the church tells us, is beatific. Beare is to be very happy. And the very verb, beare, was coined by the ancient Romans to describe for their polytheism, to describe the happiness of the gods. But beatificare means to be made happy with the happiness of the deity. I repeat, we are not to become divine. God became human in only one man. And by the way, this too is part of the mass of errors in the New Age movement. No. We remain human beings for all eternity. There's only one incarnation, that of Jesus Christ. But we shall become perfectly happy. What do we mean by perfectly happy? Fully happy. What do we mean? Completely happy. Hear it. As happy as we will deserve to be happy, depending on how faithfully we have struggled and fulfilled God's word and his will, no matter what the price has been. There are two things we should earn while here on earth. We are to earn heaven, and we are to earn as high a degree of happiness as with the grace we received is possible. Will any two people in heaven be equally happy? No. On God's side, the difference, of course, will depend on his own divine will. but on our side. We'll be as happy in heaven. And mind you, once we get there, we will become less happy. Indeed, this is good theology. We'll become happier in the thousandth century of eternity than we were when we first entered heaven. But the measurement degree of our happiness in heaven, perfect in the sense it will be full, but we determine the capacity for our happiness here on earth. The last thing we should ever, ever avoid or evade or run away from is the cost of doing God's will. The dividends are high. Nothing on Wall Street to match it. A last tense, to use the word mazuma. That's why, by the way, Matthew wrote his gospel. He wrote it, as you know, for his own Jewish people, converts to Christianity. We read Matthew. Remember what Matthew's job was before he became an apostle? Remember? The 28 chapters of Matthew's gospel are all on the business of salvation. The other three evangelists, including John, whom we're quoting from, seldom use, when speaking of the kingdom of heaven, but Matthew, that's his choice word, the kingdom of heaven. This is high finance. Heaven then will be the place of perfect happiness. But watch it. Happiness is in the will. The essence of happiness is a satisfaction of desires. The deepest desire of the created will is to possess God. As Augustine said, and then now quoted over the centuries, speaking to God, Lord, you have made our hearts for thee, and they will not rest until they rest in thee.